Republican Jeff Wilson wants to be his party's nominee in Illinois' 13th congressional district. That stretches from Urbana-Champaign over to Springfield and down to most of the Metro East. He'll need to beat the man who won the GOP's nomination in 2024, Joshua Lloyd. But Wilson, a Champaign County board member, retired naval submariner, and retired nuclear engineer, believes he's got the experience to convince primary voters that he's the right choice to flip the seat that's currently held by U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski. On this episode of Politically Speaking, I asked Wilson how he can win a district that's rated a safe Democratic seat in the 2026 midterms, and how he would govern on issues like immigration and affordability. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, an in-depth examination of Missouri and Illinois politics.
The instant we got to Illinois, we joined the Green Party. This was 2000.
So I've tried to push for those that I think are honest and really care about the future of the city.
You know, this wasn't a path that I thought I would choose in 2012 when I was able to win the closest Republican victory in the nation.
If it's something that will help Southern Illinois, I'll work with him on it. If there's something he's doing wrong, then you got to fight him on it.
I believe very strongly in the Second Amendment. I believe less government is better, and I believe local control is better.
I choose to fight for working families and for union members.
Welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm St. Louis Public Radio's Metro East reporter, Will Bauer. And joining us is one of the two Republican candidates running to be their party's nominee in Illinois' 13th congressional district.
Hi, this is Jeff Wilson. And Will Bauer, it's a pleasure being with you. And I first came to the University of Illinois for my master's degree in nuclear engineering. I love listening to WILL and Lake Wobegon and all those kind of stories.
Oh, I didn't realize you were a public media fan, but on the other side of the state, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
awesome.
It was fun. I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Well, before we get too far into our conversation, I wanted to note that we're talking on Thursday, January 29th, and things could change before we post this conversation next week, including a government shutdown.
Yep.
But we'll talk about that a little bit later. You were mentioning kind of your background, and before we talk about all the issues, I just wanted to give listeners an opportunity to know more about you. So yeah, continue down that path. Who are you and what do you do?
With me in the studio is my wonderful wife, Becky. And together we have 8 children and 11 grandchildren. And hopefully we'll have a couple more down the road. So a little bit about my history, my background, U.S. Navy. So I served on a nuclear submarine out of Pearl Harbor, and I operated the nuclear reactor on that submarine and traveled all over the ocean on the Western Pacific. And then I also received a commission as a commission officer in the Naval Reserves. After the Navy, I ended up with 2 degrees. I used the GI Bill for pay for my college plus work, a bachelor's degree at the University of Washington in mechanical engineering, and then a master's degree at the University of Illinois in nuclear engineering. After my degree in nuclear engineering, I worked in the nuclear industry for about 30-ish years. So I've worked, Will, at all 11 nuclear power plants in Illinois. So Illinois has 11 nuclear power plants, believe it or not. The country has 94, Illinois has 11. And lot of leadership roles, a lot of senior leadership roles, traveled the world, mostly worked in Illinois, but all related to nuclear energy and nuclear generation facilities. Then I retired in 2018, and then I continued in the nuclear industry, but on the consulting side, providing advice and stuff for all kinds of reactors, from a large reactor to a small reactor. And then I also got on the county board. So I'm an elected official on the Champaign County Board. And as a veteran, I'm a liaison between the Champaign County Board and the 6,000 or 7,000 veterans in Champaign County, and helping them, mostly their families, et cetera, with PTSD, and helping veterans live a better life in Champaign County. Plus other stuff, legislation, budget, all kinds of stuff. And then we made the decision, or I made the decision, to run for U.S. Congress in Central Illinois, because I believe in the greatness of the United States and the wonderful people here in Central Illinois, where we could all have a great place to live, work, and raise our families and be happy, safe, and prosperous.
How would you describe your politics? Are you a MAGA Republican? Are you an old-school Reagan Republican? How would you describe them?
I guess if you wanted to, you know, pin the tail on the donkey here, right? What kind of...
Or maybe the elephant.
Or the elephant. Oh, that's true.
Sorry.
That was... That's actually really funny. So, very good, Will. So, I'm conservative. Maybe somewhere between a Reagan-esque and I really support Trump. I believe he's doing great things for the United States and for the world and for Illinois. But I would say I'm a pro-life, pro-gun, constitutional, federalist, conservative, if you know what federalism is. And I believe that the Constitution of the United States, this is what the 250th year of the Declaration of Independence, those two documents I think are just like kind of the ultimate political documents out of Western civilization. And I pretty much all agree with freedom of speech, freedom of expression of religion, freedom to protest, freedom of the press, all the different freedoms articulated in the U.S. Constitution that belong to us, the citizens. And it's the government's role is not to give us rights, but to protect the rights that was already been given to us by, as it says in the Declaration, our Creator.
You were saying you appreciated the Trump presidency.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about the Trump presidency do you appreciate? Why has he been good for the country and Illinois?
Well, number one, the border secure. It was it day one or day one and a half that just from an executive order, then we had, what do we have, about 20 million? It depends on the number, 10 to 20 million people wandering in the United States. So I'm actually a product of immigration myself. On my mother's side, my great-grandparents escaped the Russian Empire when it was a Russian Empire in the 1890s and came through Ellis Island. It's kind of like the movie Fiddler on the Roof. It's almost identical like that. And my great-grandfather was a tailor, so it's pretty funny. So they came to Ellis Island. So I believe in legal immigration and the right process for immigration, and I don't really agree with crossing the border illegally. And I think that's been great for the United States. Also, I don't know, how many wars has he solved now? 8 or so. And his application of the Monroe Doctrine is wonderful. It's helping us. And then the economy just has got the right structure in place to redound to our benefit here in Illinois, especially when you think about energy and the ability to unleash energy, because energy is so important for us here in Illinois because it is the underlying driver for price in Illinois.
I wanted to talk more about many of those issues that you are mentioning, but before we do, I want to talk a little bit more about the campaign. I wanted to ask, do you think winning this in this district, which the Cook Political Report has rated as a safe Democratic seat this year,
true,
is possible?
That's true.
Especially in a midterm election when the party in power tends to struggle nationally.
Yeah. And good question. I believe it's absolutely possible. I'm fully invested in this, and I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't possible, but I am doing it because it's possible, and it's the right thing to do. And you're right, the Cook algorithm, right, was originally created as a D+3, right, which means 3% of the average is going to be more redound to the benefit of the Democratic constituents. And this is carved out like a snake, sort of, kind of, right? Starting from Champaign-Urbana and goes all the way through Decatur, Springfield, down through Macoupin County, and then into Belleville, and then DuPo's on the south, and then you got the river and Alton and East St. Louis.
It's a product of Democratic gerrymandering.
It is Democratic gerrymandering, and gerrymandering has been around since 1800s. But and it's 80%, 79% urban by design, cuts through all the big universities, all the college towns, and then about 21% rural by design through the computer process. But it's still winnable because the heart of the issue is really affordability and economics and common sense. And I'm a common sense conservative. I believe in solutions that benefit our society, that benefits us here in Illinois. And yes, it is indeed winnable.
In order to beat, presumably, Budzinski, I'm imagining you would need to peel away some moderate, some centrist voters. How do you go about doing that?
Good question. So you and I, and just everybody, I would think, wants to have an affordable living. Well, you live on this side of the river instead of the other side of the river. But in Illinois, We have the right to have an affordable living, and we want education. We want our kids educated, not indoctrinated. We want our kids to be able to read and write, and most of them don't in Illinois. This last year, about 83,000 net departure from Illinois. And people are leaving because it's hard for jobs. It's the taxes and the regulation is so overwhelming. And or your property taxes are egregious. And they're leaving because of that. So it's bread and butter issues, on the table issues. I want to get out of college. I want to afford a house. I want to raise a family. So all those things, it's in the middle. You know, it's the economy. Someone once said, it's the economy stupid, but I'm not saying you're stupid. I'm just saying you yourself. I'm saying it's the economy.
It's an important issue.
It's an important issue. Education, but also, you know, what's important is safety and being able to walk down the street without being harmed or go shopping and not be shot, which happens from time to time, or just corruption, to get rid of all the corruption. No one wants corruption. No one wants graft. No one wants waste. So tackling those issues. Could you imagine if what happened in Minneapolis through that food distribution program or whatever they did up there, well, how many billions of dollars were just taken out of our economy, taken out of people that really should have the money, and through corruption, other people used it. So that has to stop. So I think that's important for everybody.
Before you would take on a Democrat in the general election, you will need to win the primary. Of course, that's why you're here. Yeah. Joshua Lloyd was the GOP nominee last time. What's your message to Republicans in the 13th District? Why are you the right candidate?
So it's the differentiators. You could kind of look at it like as a job interview. It is a job interview. So my life history and just what I do now is the role of a U.S. congressman. Number one, you have to know what you're doing. You have to know what the process is. Be a good communicator, articulate, and be a great advocate for the people you represent. So those are all of the virtues and values that I have. Very knowledgeable, articulate, experienced, actually had multiple jobs, high education, leadership roles. Elected official already and know how budgets work, know how legislations work, how negotiations work. Know sometimes you have to still keep moving even if you lose the vote, because then the district I'm in, there's 6 Republicans, 16 Democrats on the county board. So I'm able to manage that. I'm able to work through that, not without acrimony, without beating my head against the wall or pounding my fist on the table. So all these attributes is what you need in your congressman. So I would say those are the huge differentiators.
I did want to talk about some specific issues. And the first one that's dominated the headlines the last week or so has been immigration enforcement.
Yep.
There's been a lot that has happened since last week when a Border Patrol agent shot and killed Alex Pretty in Minneapolis. What do you make of that footage?
First of all, I would want to first say that, could you imagine a world without the law enforcement? What if there were no police? What if there's no one that protect the innocent or enforce the law? Being a law enforcement is a very difficult job. I would hate to be on the front line of law enforcement and be yelled at, screamed at, cursed at, spit at, and then people attack your family. So people wonder, why are you wearing masks? You know, it doesn't seem right. Well, if they were not wearing masks, then you can guarantee that someone would be going after their family. Because that's part of the craziness. Why is it that, like in Florida or other states, that there isn't this challenge with immigration customs enforcement? Why is that uniquely so volatile in Minneapolis? So I would say ICE is not the bad guys. And the mission, just like Tom Holman today, right? Tom Holman was there today. What's the real mission? Is to get rid of the real bad guys. And it seems crazy that some people in the population don't want that to happen. It is a real tragedy of the two individuals that were shot. It's an absolute tragedy. I want to see the process work out as far as I want justice. We all want justice. Who doesn't want justice? So however it turns out, let's wait and see how it turns out. So I'm not going to prejudge. And I know there's different people on different radio stations, TVs, all over the place. They're saying, you know, you're the devil. And the other person says, no, you're the devil. You're bad. No, you're the angel. All this stuff. I want to see the process work out. And I want to see justice served. If the law enforcement officer is incorrect, inappropriate, whatever, then justice should be served. But nevertheless, I should not be inhibited or restricted or frustrated in carrying out their mission, which is really to protect the United States with respect to immigration.
There's a lot of folks asking for a independent investigation, maybe from the state, just given that it was a federal agent that would have been the one who shot and killed Alex Preti. Do you think that, or how would you like to see it handled going forward in terms of an investigation?
I can understand the independence because it's so emotional. Now, how do you get that independence? And could that independence really come from the mayor of Minneapolis? I don't think so. Can that independence come from the governor of Minnesota? I don't think so. They've already declared what their positions are. But I believe there should be some independence. It should be organized in an open way after the facts have been evaluated. I don't agree with incremental or leaking or whatever you want to call it of facts, because that just inflames both sides. But having the right people with the right jurisprudence under due process evaluate the issues and look at the facts and then let the facts be what the facts are.
You mentioned border czar Tom Homan, who's now in Minnesota, and Trump has seemed maybe to think there are at least some adjustments to be made, right? He's put Tom Homan in Minneapolis. Border Patrol Commander Greg Bovino and Kristi Noem have been pulled out. And I think there's some critics that would contend the president realizes the operation has maybe gone awry. Do you believe in any of these instances that the immigration enforcement has gone too far?
I'm not going to say that they've gone too far. I want to see how the facts, because I think we're just so influenced by the instantaneous media or the night show host or Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. They all have their prejudgments, sometimes already canned ahead of time. And let's just see how it turns out. Obviously, there's not a problem in Florida. There's a lot of deportations and criminals being taken and captured and deported throughout the United States. You have to ask, why is it so different or so peculiar in Minneapolis? So I hope we'll find out.
I was talking with Robin Kelly, Democratic mm-hmm. congresswoman from the Chicagoland area, who's yeah. running for the Senate seat.
Yep.
And she has, prior to all of this happening, had introduced articles of impeachment against Kristi Noem.
I'm not in favor of that. And what are the real facts? Everything, sometimes it's just on both sides of the aisle, right? People scream and shout and claim this and that. And let's just see how the story unfolds. So, yeah, I would not really support Senator Kelly, but all I'm on the legislative side, on the congressional side. She's a senator. It's really the House of Representatives that brings the articles first, right? And then it goes to the Senate for the trial or the decision. So I...
She's currently a House member.
But she's running for Senate.
Running for Senate, correct, yep.
So, yeah, she's running for Senate. So, no, I would not support it. But I would not be oblivious to understanding what the facts are.
And as we are talking, there appears to be a deal being worked out in the Senate to keep the government funded.
Mm-hmm.
But the main rub is that Democrats don't want to approve funding for ICE in a bigger bill.
Yeah.
They would like to pull that out
yeah.
for separate negotiations. And it appears the deal may be funding until September for the other agencies that are included, but only temporarily for ICE. So let's say you're in the House and the Senate sends that bill over in this hypothetical situation. How would you, Jeff Wilson, vote?
I agree with what Mike Johnson accomplished and what the majority voted in the House of Representatives for all 12 to be passed. And that's where I believe. I don't believe it's appropriate for some grandstanding in the Senate to hold hostage the government. Hold hostage payment to the military, hold hostage SNAP benefits, hold hostage all the USDA benefits, all those benefits for Head Start. Everything held hostage because someone is irritated and grandstand. So Mr. Schumer has already shown that he has made a lot of bad decisions. I would say this is another one of his bad decisions.
So among the wants from Democrats, if they were to approve the bill, is ICE agents not to wear masks, requiring body cameras, and wanting to require warrants before a federal agent can enter a home. What do you kind of think of those proposals?
I think that the ICE agents should execute federal law in the most efficient and humane way possible. I don't really agree with the extra restrictions. I don't agree with that. No, I don't. I don't. So, no, I would not support that because their job is to enforce immigration law and not have a lot of encumbrances placed upon them that damages them, their families of the ICE agents, and their ability to carry out the lawful orders of a Constitution, Article 1 requirement. The Article 1 requirement is the legislator that gave that power and created ICE under Homeland Security. So I would not support that.
Okay, let's talk about something other than immigration.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about Greenland. Trump has recently reached a framework of a deal with NATO in Denmark regarding Greenland, and there's not a ton of details about it, and forgive me if there are more and I'm just not finding them, but it seems that the U.S. will have a bigger say in their current military bases and potentially adding more, and also a first right of refusal regarding natural resources. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that effort by Trump?
The United States has been trying to either purchase Greenland for over 100 years. And during World War II, when the Nazis took over all of Europe and Denmark. So Denmark had no way to protect Greenland because they were taken over by the Germans. And the United States rightfully felt that Greenland was under threat, which is a big threat to us here. And Greenland's about three times the size of Texas. It's the right thing to do for our national security. Actually, it's the right thing to do for our national security and for security of Europe itself. And I like the results. So the results is it looks like the NATO alliance on the European side, along with the United States, can put a structure in place on the island of Greenland that results like the Iron Dome. You've heard about the Iron Dome. That provides additional protection from rogue missiles that can come from North Korea, come from China, come from Russia. So I believe it's the right thing to do. The sea lanes are the most important thing we have in the world for commerce, for trade. It's the U.S. Navy that keeps those sea lanes open. And there are submarines, whatever, patrolling on both east and west sides of the of Greenland, both the Russians and the Chinese and the NATO and U.S. It's essential for our security. And I think it's a great deal. First right of refusal is great, and minerals are great because we need the natural resources. Because I think 90% of our rare earth metals are obtained from China right now, which affects our national security. So, and we need those for chips and all kinds of stuff. So I applaud Mr. Trump and his arrangement and the final results. Let's just see what happens next.
And I know there are a lot of Republicans that feel maybe the end result doesn't necessarily justify the means or how he went about doing it. They feel the threats or demands by Trump have done irreparable damage with our closest allies in NATO. What do you think about how Trump went about securing the deal for Greenland?
Number one, I'm not the executive. I would be a legislator. The executive's role is to commander-in-chief and protect the United States, the Constitution, commerce, trade, secure our rights. Legislators legislate. It's not my role to be an executive. Sometimes in the kitchen, things get really messy. But it's the end result that we want. So it's not for me to judge on means and methods. It's for us to look at the results. It's kind of like the fruit on the tree. Is it good fruit or bad fruit? Well, you know by the fruit. So if the fruit turns out to be good, than the means and methods? Well, it just is what it is. That's part of the messiness of being in the kitchen. It's the messiness of world diplomacy. It's real politics. It's reality. I think we should not be all purist in our hearts for negotiations. I think we should just understand reality, understand the world as it is, not how we really want it to be. No, so no opinion. It's okay that he's doing what he's doing.
You mentioned affordability at the start of this conversation. It definitely seems like it's one of the more common themes of the midterm elections. Say you're elected to Congress.
Yeah,
how do you go
it.
About making everyday life more affordable?
So there's two different ways for affordability, right? When the left or the hardened Democrats think about affordability, which they created in the first place, the unaffordability part, the high taxes, the regulation, the energy going through the roof. Just look at Illinois. Oh, my goodness. That CEJA Act has actually destroyed the energy infrastructure in Illinois, created by the Democrats. And then come back to you and say, well, things are unaffordable. We caused it. Let us help it again by giving you more taxes, taking more of your money, taking more of your resources, which will result in less affordability for you. It's reality. That's how it works. So the conservative approach, the capitalist approach, is to grow the economy. And it's competition that makes things more affordable. It really is. And it's competition and less regulation, less restriction, less taxes that cause businesses to grow. And when a business grows, it hires people. And when it hires people, they have jobs. And when they have jobs, then things are more affordable. And then you have more grocery stores. You have more pizza parlors. You have more school districts. You have more funding for schools. And the way to stop the demise in Illinois is to get rid of the stupid regulations that are killing us and the taxes and unleash the American economy. And energy is a key component to affordability. It's kind of like, it's like a 10 or 20% tax on everything. It's hidden. You don't know it. But when you have low energy prices, like gas prices coming down, then you find out that transportation costs are less. Then you find out production costs are less. So that means the purchase at the end use is less. All related, energy is a big part. I could go on and on about affordability, but it's the means and methods to affordability. Government handouts to improve affordability is not affordability. But unleashing the economic, innovative strength of Americans, that results in a better affordability. The other part of affordability is education. We need to have a very good, educated, all of us. And unfortunately, like Illinois, maybe you have a 30% chance of graduating high school with the ability to read and write at grade level. And then that affects the trades, because then you have to go in the entry of the trades, and then you have to do additional backup work so the tradesperson could even pass to get his apprenticeship or her apprenticeship. We need to get rid of we need to just focus on classical education so people can read and write and function in society. And I think, in my opinion, the Democratic Party has eviscerated education and created an underclass that's always dependent upon more taxes and more services. So that's my opinion. We need education, lower energy, more affordability based on capitalistic activities, not on a socialistic policy.
I wanted to ask about healthcare costs, and maybe one of the things that's been most talked about is the Affordable Care Act subsidies that would have expired. They were the subject of much of the disgruntlement over the government shutdown that happened last fall. And an effort to revive them passed the House earlier this year, but the Senate did not pass it. Would you have supported that legislation to bring back the tax subsidies for the Affordable Care Act?
Answer is no.
Why so?
Because everything the government subsidizes, price goes up. And those subsidies were created mostly under the Biden administration. And COVID is over with, as last I found out, last I think. You and I are both not wearing a mask today, or whatever the programs were back then. Everything the government subsidized, price goes up. Because when the government subsidizes a lot of stuff, it pushes other people out of the market. Other people out of the market makes you only have a sole source user. Sole source users charge whatever they want to charge. It's like a monopoly. And some of those subsidies for people that are 4 and 5 times the poverty index. Why are they being subsidized? I agree with safety nets. I 100% agree with safety nets. But I think what the Democratic Party did was they went way over the top on their so-called safety nets. And we all deserve to live, have health, and we want to be affordable. But I don't see subsidies as the means and methods for – this is just our previous discussion about affordability. We make it affordable because we tax other people so and draw more money out of the tax system to make it affordable for some. Why can't it be affordable for all by getting rid of all these subsidies, allowing competition, getting rid of the middleman like President Trump did, like with the drug pricing, getting rid of those insurance companies as the pass-through, because it's the middle people, the pass-throughs, that jack up prices, in my opinion.
Last question on affordability. I wanted to ask you about an idea that Trump has been floating about sending American stimulus checks worth $2,000. These would be paid for by tariff revenue.
Yeah.
What do you make of them?
I haven't really made a decision on that. So, I mean, tariffs do three things. One, it brings more income to the state that's causing the tariff, the country, the nation. When I say state, I mean nation. And then two, it's a leverage. And three, it helps protect local manufacturing or local businesses. Well, it's coming back to the United States. If the decision is we'll take part of that and distribute it to the 350 million people we have in the United States, about, then that's fine. That's fine. So I think it's okay. It's actually quite an innovative idea. Whenever you ever thought of government taking your money and giving it back to you, that's kind of unique, I think. So I think it's a good idea.
Wanted to transition into some local issues. So you'd be representing the 13th Congressional District, right, if you were to win.
Yep.
We're talking about the strange shape of the district, right, all the way from Urbana-Champaign, where you live, all the way down here to the Metro East. What would be your priorities for the district in terms of local issues that you'd like to advocate for on the federal level?
So District 13 is bizarre, right? I mean, the old District 13 had a lot more rural aspect to it. The new, by design, the new District 13 is about 79% urban and about 20-ish or so, 21% agriculture. But still, we're the breadbasket for a lot of the world. Even though 13's carved out that way, you still have 12 and 15 adjacent. So what I would do is I would work with my partners, with Mary Miller and Mike Bullist out of 12, and the three of us, we could do a lot of good for Illinois and the agriculture community. And then you have Darren LaHood a little bit north of us, around Peoria area. So the three of us working together on the same team, wearing the same jersey, would make a big difference for the agriculture community, because farmers should be able to farm, should get rid of government regulation, and open markets. We need more open markets for our farmers. Now, as far as the urban aspect, and the education aspect, because it cuts through all the different universities, right? Starting with the University of Illinois up in the Champaign area. We need a more affordable education. And a reasonable approach to student loans. And I personally cannot solve it all by myself. So it takes a team. It takes a lot of collaboration, both with the Democrats and Republicans, and people more knowledgeable, to come up with a workable system. The other part is really affordability. We talked about that forever, but really is the energy and the housing and jobs. And we need more energy and more jobs in our district. And like we could talk with like Granite City, that's pretty close to here, with the steel mill in Granite City. Well, if it wasn't for Mr. Trump with President Trump with his golden ticket, that place would be shut down right now.
I should note that the CEO of U.S. Steel would say otherwise, but...
Of course he would. I don't disagree with that. And I disagree with him. That's okay. there's 350,000 million people in the country. We probably don't all have the same opinion. So I'm aligning with Mr. Trump. I'm President Trump on that issue. Well, and recently we had Alton Steel is shutting down, right? So we've got to figure out what the causes are, what the drivers are. And I can bet a lot of it has to do with the cost of operations. We can reduce the cost of operations by reducing regulation and energy costs. That would be a huge difference. So it's jobs, education, housing. Those three things.
I did want to actually ask you about Granite City. As you probably know, but just in case people who are listening to this don't know, their parent company, U.S. Steel, announced that they would restart one of the two blast furnaces this spring.
Yeah.
And it was seen by the steel workers as a short-term win and an opportunity to prove themselves to the new Japanese ownership that owns U.S. Steel now.
Yeah.
How would your office advocate for the mill long-term?
More jobs for more steel workers at that mill. So it's a lot of negotiation. It's not, can't snap the finger and make it happen. But what can we do together with the owners and the state and the feds? How can we help to make that more economically viable and allow them and open more markets for them to produce more steel? If they can produce more steel, it'll bring in more jobs. So again, it's back to jobs. And good union jobs as steel workers. So I can't say I can't snap my finger. And it takes a lot of tough negotiation, a lot of collaboration. It's the right thing to keep that place open. It's the right thing to keep jobs in the community. It's the right, because you need it. You need all that.
The last local issue I wanted to ask you about is Cokie Heights. This is a suburb south of East St. Louis. And it's been a part of the Metro East that's seen lots of flooding and sewer problems for a long, long time. And there's been some progress, but it's been really slow. And residents there are always saying, hey, we need to see these improvements faster. We need to see the federal, the state dollars turn into actual solving of these sewer issues faster. Do you think there's anything that you could be doing as a elected official potentially next year to be speeding these projects up?
Yes.
How do you go about that?
I'm like a problem solver, and I've done that problem solving for, I don't know, 30, 40 years in project management, engineering. And so figure out what the goal is. No flooding. No sewer. Sewer processed properly. That's the goal. Now you got to figure out how to get there. So what's the roadblocks? What's really the real roadblocks? Not the political roadblocks, not the Facebook roadblocks. What's the real roadblocks? Get rid of those roadblocks, because everybody wants to live in a safe community. And when you have those issues in the Cahokia Heights, it's not safe for the people that live there. It has to be solved. Now, do I know? I know how to solve it. I know the process to solve it. And to work with all the different agencies and groups to get it done and make it a priority. Because things don't get done if they're not a priority. And that seems like a strong priority to solve in that area. It's been languishing. And I don't know if there's a sense of urgency enough. So I can be a little persistent and find the right people to get the job done. That's what that's my job, is to advocate for that community. Down my fist on the table and say, why isn't this getting done? Where's the roadblock? And then go talk to those people. And that's what it takes, really.
Well, those are all the issues that I wanted to ask you about. And I kind of asked you a similar question, but just in terms of a closing message, remind us, Jeff, why do you think you are the right Republican in this primary race?
Well, I definitely am the right Republican for this race. So my name is Jeff Wilson. I'm running for U.S. Congress in Central Illinois and part of Southern Illinois, which is District 13, lucky number 13. And the funny, I'll give you a quick story. The submarine I was on was, the number of the submarine was 666.
Really?
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter. There still could be a lot of good things happen in a bad number. So there you go. But I want to take your voice into Washington, D.C. as your representative. Representing and listening to your voice. And what happens is, what we need to do is just listen to one another, come up with a common solution, and then I have the skills and ability to do it. I'm after protecting life, liberty, the Constitution, lowering costs for families, parents first, keeping children safe, safeguarding our freedoms, our parental freedoms, and securing our borders and keeping us safe, supporting our farmers and law enforcement, energy, and job growth. And my whole history of experience makes me the right Republican for this job.
If voters are curious about finding out more about you, where should they do that online?
Well, please go to my website, and that's Wilson for F-O-R Congress, wilsonforcongress.com, and I look forward to hearing from you. And if you'd like a sign in your yard or help donate or volunteer, please reach out to me or my campaign team. We have quite a strong campaign team, a very good campaign team. And so reach out to us and myself at wilsonforcongress.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff, for making the time to be here.
My pleasure.
Jeff is one of two Republicans running in Illinois' 13th congressional district. We hope to speak to primary opponent Joshua Lloyd on a future episode. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Until next time, so long.